Well, hey folks, Mark DiMatteo here with a message going out to our Great Questions group on this, well, let's see, 17th day of June 2012. I trust this finds each of you doing well. And this is actually message number 16, and it is titled Two Pieces of the Puzzle. Okay, two pieces of the puzzle. And as a quick reminder to you all, you are new to our broadcasts, first of all, would like to welcome you all. We are actually continuing to grow and have now actually reached 500 folks that are at least a part of my personal email list for this group. There's other folks that are on the blog that are subscribing. And of course, the messages are being shared with many, many more, but we continue to grow, which is exciting. So again, glad to have everybody with us. And if you would like to find out some more info about our group, and also along with all my previously recorded messages, you can check out my blog at markdematteo.com, markdematteo.com. Okay? As a matter of fact, if you haven't yet heard the prior recordings, let me encourage you to check them out when you have an opportunity. Since this is actually a chronological review of my Great Questions Quest, but it's becoming everybody's, it will put the current message in the proper context. And actually, folks, to be frank with you, I recently reviewed a number of the audios myself, as it helps me keep my theme and thought process consistent and in a logical format. But honestly, I must tell you that they even had an impact on me, okay? Which is pretty amazing considering I'm recording them. But again, it's not about the messenger, me. It's about the message. And learning all of this stuff has literally rocked my world. It's changed my life, changed my destiny. And I still love hearing it. And let me just say this to you. As a matter of fact, the more you hear it, the more it sinks in. And I've studied this stuff and listened to it on a continuing basis. And the more I can get it in my head, the better. So I would encourage you to do the same thing again when you have a chance. So, okay, now that we've talked about that important stuff, let's get into our message for this week. And continuing on from where we left off last time, let me summarize some of what I had learned and talked about in the last few messages, and then share a couple of significant conclusions that I had come to up to this point in my studies. So first, let's do a quick review. I shared with you folks in message 11 that one of the reasons I personally hoped to find evidence that God existed was because I also wanted to believe in the reality of a universal afterlife, or an afterlife that everyone could have a shot at, so to speak, or we could call that a heaven, and I felt like I needed a legitimate reason to do so rather than just blindly hoping one was there, okay? That's one of the things I decided I wasn't going to do anymore, blindly believe anything. I wanted to check it out and have reasons to believe. Then in message 12, we introduced the scientific law of causality, or cause and effect, and how it validated what I had sensed intuitively, that every effect, including an afterlife, must have an adequate cause. Okay? Next, in message 13, we turned our attention to the amazing reality of our imaginations, and in particular, our ability to imagine realms far beyond anything possible in our current level of existence, which of course includes the idea of some kind of an eternal paradise or heaven or all these different words that we use for a far better afterlife. And furthermore, what could possibly be an adequate cause for this unusual effect that we can imagine it, okay? Then in the two messages leading up to this one, 14 and 15, I shared with you just a few of my observations demonstrating that this is not an isolated condition, but rather one that is indeed widespread. For it seems that everyone is capable of envisioning some kind of a far better afterlife, whether they personally choose to believe in one or not. I did this, of course, through relating another important aspect of my life, my continuing interest in the effect of the cosmos, which we'll talk about further, space travel, which we'll talk a little bit about further, okay, and themes I had noticed from having been a longtime Star Trek fan, okay? And speaking of that, folks, before I actually get into those conclusions, I'd like to take just a few moments and return with you to the last example from Star Trek that I referred to in the last message regarding the vast machine entity to point out two additional observations that were significant to me in light of what I had learned up to this point in my journey. And I want to share them with you. Number one, first, though the entity had supposedly amassed knowledge from across the galaxy, incredibly, it still had no answers to the fundamental questions of existence. I point this out because this is the underlying theme to a supposition that has been proposed by many people I have encountered both at the outset and during the course of my quest, and that being, quote, hey, no matter how much we study and learn, we will never know for sure what this life is all about, end quote. Well, I now know that this doesn't make much sense, for I discovered that even a basic but thoughtful look at the cosmos and how it operates should begin to give any inquiring mind some answers. And therefore, after acquiring that much knowledge, that entity should have come to at least a few conclusions. And as we will continue to see, and as I've mentioned before, most of the answers to the great questions are not that complex and can be found without too much difficulty if somebody will simply take the time and make the effort to look for them, which we're doing, okay? Now, the second point. And folks, this is really important, so follow me here. The basic premise of a machine entity gaining complexity on its own, as the first point, and then ultimately joining with a human being to create an entity of an even higher order, I now knew was a scientific impossibility. For even though at one point in the past I might have wanted to believe that something like that might be possible, you know, hey, how cool might that be to, you know, be some kind of a bionic person? And you see a lot of conjecture about that in all kinds of different movies and themes and things like that. But based on my new awareness of the law of causality, I now was aware of the fact that that could not happen. Follow me. For both the machine entity and the human, though they existed prior, are less complex than the new entity, and therefore, since it does not have a completely adequate cause, it is in violation of the law and consequently is an effect that cannot exist. As I mentioned previously, I now felt dramatically empowered by this new law and its ability to help me to critically assess the accuracy of various models of reality that were being presented to me in my search, and in determining which were valid and which were not. I mean, folks, before I might have said, wow, you know, maybe that can happen. I mean, how do I know if it can happen or not? But now as I started quantifying some of these things, it became apparent that I could put this little test to it and determine what was valid and what wasn't. So keeping this important new tool in hand, and now looking at the effect of our imagination in general and our universal ability to envision some kind of a better afterlife in particular, let me share with you some of the simple and yet significant conclusions I came to. And folks, quite honestly, it's some exciting stuff, okay? First, now follow me here. First, it seemed reasonable to me, and again, this is in light of causality, it seemed reasonable to me to propose that an adequate cause for the reality of our imagination must indeed ultimately be another form of imagination itself, and one of a higher order that would also have had to exist prior to any other mind that has ever been capable of any imaginative thought. This would be especially true when considering the highest forms of our imaginations, as in a heaven, where we have no present basis of experience to draw from. For as I just mentioned, the basis of imagination is thought, and ultimately the only adequate cause for thought is a mind, either ours or somebody else's, okay? And while I considered the possibility of the idea of an afterlife simply being handed down from prior generations, it still begs the question, where did the concept come from in the first place, and why is it so universal? Furthermore, we still have the far more important issue of where our actual imagination came from. And here our ancestors are most definitely an insufficient cause, okay? Now follow me here. For though they definitely preceded us, and though perhaps some of them were far more imaginative than we are, they are still most definitely not of a higher order of complexity or being. Now, to bear this out, simply try to imagine, and there's that word again, imagine, but anyway, simply try to imagine with me the possibility, or trying to build someone a brain. Imagine trying to build someone a brain. See what I mean? It's an impossibility. Folks, the brain has been called the most complex physical system in the entire known universe. And isn't that astounding when we really stop and think about it? And we're going to come back and talk more about that in future messages. But for right now, thinking about that, it shows you why we are an inadequate cause. And I said nothing of being then able to program that brain with imagination if we were to somehow be able to put it together. How do we get it to then work, okay? Therefore, it seemed rational to me to conclude that the only plausible, adequate cause for the vast community of minds that have inhabited the earth at any given time in our history must be some kind of comprehensive and antecedent mind of a far greater order. Wow. And in regard to afterlife, It also seemed sensible to conclude that the only probable adequate cause for this universal ability of being able to both envision and also to desire an ultimate and far greater life after death had to logically be this same transcendent mind that was responsible for our imagination in the first place. And furthermore, it seemed to follow properly that a mind of that magnitude could also easily be the adequate cause of an actual universal afterlife itself. Now, folks, we could expand on these thoughts and talk about them almost indefinitely, okay? But we don't have time to right now. So, summarizing, in light of causality, it seemed that I had found my first pieces of tangible evidence for the actual existence of not only an afterlife, but also for a mind of a far greater order which could be behind it. And while I certainly did not feel this was completely conclusive up to this point, and I still had many unanswered questions, which we will discuss later, it was yet still compelling and very exciting, and I was quite pleased to find my first indications, based on a solid scientific law, for the validity of two of the concepts I was hoping to find evidence for, and that being the existence of God and the reality of heaven. So you might now say that I was able to put two more significant pieces of life's puzzle into place. And oh yeah, we're making progress, okay? Which is always a good thing. So now in the next message, we are going to begin taking a closer look at the basic construct of the cosmos, discussing this grand effect that we also must account for, and begin to see some of what it began to teach me regarding the great questions. So folks, stay tuned. We've got an exciting road ahead and look forward to talking to you next time. Okay? Take care, folks. Bye-bye.